I don't stop working. I was sick for like 10 plus. It was like 2 weeks.
Yeah, something like that.
There's 17 days that I was sick.
All the time, and you walked around like a Dickensian street urchin the whole time in a little hat.
I really did, though.
There's a coal all over your face.
Even now as we speak, do you know how many little layers I have to wear because my body temperature dropped like 3 degrees?
It's a little known secret. Every time Cassie gets sick, she starts going outside and trying to sell newspapers.
See, now that was a good joke.
And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And I know enough. You'll be so proud of me. Guess what I did the other day?
What'd you do the other day, Cassie?
I gave somebody a proper education on how Doctor Who started.
You watched a whole movie about that.
Yes. And then somebody asked, they were like, why do the doctors change actors? And I went, oh, funny, you should ask. And then they went, wow, that's actually super ingenious. And I went, isn't it? And then she asked, who's your favorite doctor? And then I went, oh boy, is that a loaded question? And then another friend entered the room. It was like, oh, I've only really watched one season. And I went, oh, which season is that? And he went, not Tenet. And I went, oh, Smith. And he went, no. Oh, I've only watched Eccleston season. And I went, wow. What a only season to watch.
I mean, in a way, it makes sense. You just watched one doctor's entire run. It'd be like watching the TV movie and nothing else.
Yep.
So,
are you proud of me?
I am so very proud of
you.
And, you know, you brought up a good topic here talking about why the doctor changes faces because we have our first adventure with a new doctor.
Hooray!
This is the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi's first full story. We got a couple glimpses of him before.
All I know is angry eyebrows.
Yeah, we got his angry eye. We got his angry eyes from
just in case
from the 50th anniversary, and then we got the very end of Matt Smith's last special where we find out that Peter Capaldi has new kidneys and he doesn't like the color.
Mm-hmm.
And
so does that mean that Smith had different colored kidneys? And if so, what color were they?
I mean, Tennant had new teeth, so. Nothing wrong with having new kidneys,
I
suppose.
They all have new teeth.
I think there was a comic or something that implied that he had suddenly had like polka dot kidneys. And that was, and Capaldi could feel the polka dots. If memory serves, it's something like that. I don't have the thing right in front of me, but I know that it's
quirky girl.
Yeah, it was, and it's from a comic. So it's like you could be weirder in the comics than you can in the show. And the show's already pretty weird. But yeah.
Yeah, it's super weird. Very kooky crazy.
Yeah, we are getting our first adventure with Peter Capaldi. Do you have any expectations about him at all?
No.
No.
Well, all I know is that of the doctors, he's the one that does and doesn't have a uniform.
Yeah, we went over the fashion show of sorts, and he and Inchuti both don't really wear the same. Like, he had an outfit.
By his
second season, he sort of decided, I want to do different looks.
He has an outfit in the same way that, like, Benoit Blanc has an outfit.
Yeah, he's got an aesthetic.
I think this doctor just likes clothes.
Yeah, he's got, like, an aesthetic. And I think Capaldi's, more than any other doctor, I feel like Capaldi was really, like, evolving his character as the show went on. Because Matt Smith was very... He was more about exploring the depth of a character that was already there. Tennant was sort of the same thing. Capaldi was the first one where the doctor, I feel like, is very different by the end of his run versus the beginning.
I also feel like he has every reason to be different because of everything that has transpired prior to him assuming the form of the doctor.
Yeah. Because, you know, they've saved Gallifrey. They know that Gallifrey's in another little parallel dimension. But part of the central, not motivation, but part of like the central weight around the character's neck has been the Time War and what he had to do. And this is the first incarnation of the Doctor that knows what really happened.
This is the doctor that is aware of what has happened, is fulfilling the title of the doctor, but is also redefining that title.
Yes. And so when Matt Smith announced his departure, they took to the task of finding a new person, and they found Peter Capaldi. And, you know, luck sort of in good timing, they had enough time where they could fit him into the 50th in a way that where they've never really had a doctor show up before his incarnation before. That was the first time they ever got to do that.
A little sneak peek.
Yeah. But it's funny, Stephen Moffat specifically, he's gone on record saying that he thought about Capaldi for the 11th Doctor, but then when he saw Matt Smith, it was so much like, oh, that's who I want.
Mm-hmm.
But after leaving Matt, he was like, we just left having the youngest Doctor, and now let's do something really different, and picked basically the oldest Doctor. Capaldi is only a year younger than William Hartnell when he took the role.
Mm.
And Capaldi has been watching the show since Hartnell's run. He was, he might have been the head of a Doctor Who fan club when he was in high school.
Nerd.
There are like fan letters that are published in, I think, Doctor Who magazine from him. Like he of all people who have played it, like this is something he wanted to do.
He's been there. What's that one Narnia quote?
Do not cite the old yeah. text to me woman. I was there when they were written.
Yeah, that's him.
Very much so. And it's interesting. I watched an interview where Moffat was talking about the process for finding the 12th Doctor. And so they auditioned Peter Capaldi,
mm-hmm.
and no one else. They had him come in, did not tell him he was the only one auditioning, but I believe it was Steven and I think it was Mark Gatiss that he was talking to. It might have been Ben Stevenson, the drama commissioner at the BBC, but it was basically it was him and I think it was Mark Gatiss. And Steven had his list and he got Mark Gatiss's list, and it was Peter Capaldi, a blank line, and then some other options in case Peter didn't work out. But at the top of Steven's list was also Capaldi. So basically it was like the only reason we won't go for Peter Capaldi is if he doesn't want to or can't do it. But of course he could, and he did for his three seasons, just like most other doctors.
Nice.
And this is his first time with Deep Breath. We haven't seen them since Christmas of 2013, and this episode comes out August of 2014. So you've had a good, we got a good 8 months of, you know, buildup of theories. And I was a bad kid when these episodes are coming out,
mm-hmm.
because this season, before it aired, a lot of mid production versions of episodes leaked, like didn't have the effects done. And so mm-hmm. I watched a lot of episodes before, like a few weeks before they came out without all the effects in them. It'll be fun because I haven't really, I was watching a lot of the episodes twice back then because I would watch these leaked cuts and then I would watch the fully rendered episodes.
Because at this point you were on the bandwagon, you were driving it.
Yeah, but because I was already basically watching them twice, I haven't really revisited Capaldi's era much. And so this whole section, I'm excited to do it because this is sort of the one that I've come back to the least. Like I rewatched Jodie's run kind of twice already. I haven't really rewatched In Shooties, but his is so fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
But Capaldi is the one that I have the most distance from that I haven't really revisited, and so I'm really looking forward to see how I come at this with not fresh eyes, but with like relaxed eyes, I guess would be a good way of putting
it. Recycled eyes.
Yes. As you have already heard, Peter Capaldi is a Scottish man.
Yeah.
David Tennant was also a Scottish man, but Capaldi does not do his best London accent. Capaldi gets to be Scottish. I sometimes wonder how David Tennant feels about that. Like he's like, we could do that.
Tennant was just, he was just happy to be there.
You know, that is kind of funny that we've got a pattern right now of Eccleston, who knew nothing about the show, and then David Tennant, who's a huge fan of the show, and then Matt Smith, who knew nothing about the show, and now Peter Capaldi, huge fan of the show again. Just a fun little thing there. It's interesting to think of him as the Doctor because he's not really known for these, like, genre parts. The thing mm-hmm. he's best known for is there's a show and a movie in the UK that's basically like The Office, but it's about working in UK politics.
Okay.
And Peter Capaldi plays, I believe he's an assistant to the prime minister, whose main character trait is saying swears in creative ways.
Uh-huh.
I so very specifically remember him saying things like fuckity bye as he's like running away from somebody. You would probably really enjoy In the Loop. That's the movie that that I think of for him. But that was like the most famous thing he had done. He had also had a couple of episodes of, he did one episode of Doctor Who where he was Caecilius. I believe it was Caecilius. He was in the,
you look to me as if I remember,
I was sort of looking in my brain in the episode where they go to Pompeii, the fires of Pompeii. So that was his biggest role. He also had a part in the Sarah Jane Adventures. He had a brief part in one of those episodes as well. We haven't really watched any of that show. And now he's the Doctor. They do. They will touch on that a little bit. I don't think right now. I think it's a few episodes down the line where they talk about why he has that face, a face that the Doctor has definitely seen.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to worry about that right now. Right now we get to worry about the Cassie Professy.
Yay.
I have a couple questions for you here. One, the first of which is inspired. A patron sort of gave me part of a prompt here, and I've worded it into a proper Professy question. This was inspired by patron Scott Sandler. And if you would like to submit Professy questions, you can join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Maybe. We'll see.
This episode has Stephen Moffat bring back an alien he created during Russell T. Davies' run.
God, I hate you, Scott.
So you have four options, because he basically came up with a new monster every season. There was the nanogenes from The Empty Child.
Okay.
They were the ones who made the little boy say, are you my mommy?
Uh-huh.
There's the clockwork droids from The Girl in the Fireplace.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
It could be the Weeping Angels again.
Fuck those guys in particular.
Or the Vashta Narada from Silence in the Library, where we first met River Song.
God damn it. Okay, what's the stupid question?
So this episode has Stephen Moffat bring back an alien he created during Russell T. Davies' run. Which creature do you think he brought back?
What? I don't get anything? Okay, deep breath. That's all I get mm-hmm. is the name of the episode.
Like, which do you think there's more of a story for?
The breath of an angel becomes an angel. Don't breathe. Don't even bleathe. That's bleed? Yeah, it's that's blinking and breathing at the same time. That's a 1 in 4 chance for any of them. Mm-hmm. I don't get anything. This is unfair.
I mean,
it's just a chance.
That's Cassie. That's the Professy. That's the game. You got to read the tea leaves.
No, it's
draw the tarot cards. Roll the dice.
Have you any cards or dice for me to draw and or roll? No, you don't. Unfair question.
I narrowed it down to 4 for you.
Okay, thank you. Does the title help me at all? Because that's all I have to work with.
That's why it's Professy, Cassie. You've got to see.
Okay, yes, I.
What do the spirits tell you?
Any good con artist will tell you, I need more info to go off of. I'm getting a reading from the room. Does somebody here have a person in their life whose name starts with M-M-U, Mom?
Oh. Well, I guess the real question is, what do you think would be most interesting for a doctor to come across after all this time?
I don't fucking know. Any of them?
Any of them?
No. Okay. Probably not an angel, because we did just see angels in the Christmas special.
Yeah, he brought the angels back recently. Almost every season for...
So I don't think it's angels.
Okay.
I want it to be angels. I don't think it is.
Okay. So we're crossing off angels. Then that means you got the nanogenes, the clockwork droids, or the Vashta Narada.
Nanogenes or Vashta Narada. Those are my two. So I've narrowed it down.
Okay. So you're crossing off the clockwork droids?
I think so.
Okay. That leaves you with the nanogenes that were basically like nurse droids. They were like little nurse robot bugs that just...
I'm going to say it's that, because if my only clue is the title, then that means that it has something to do with.
We did see them put gas masks on somebody. So.
Yes. Okay. So that's my prophetic guess.
Alrighty.
Prophetic, pathetic. Next.
All right. So Cassie guesses that the nanogenes from the empty child and the doctor dances return for Deep Breath. And then the doctor briefly thinks in his just regenerated delusional state that Clara is one of the 11th Doctor's other companions. Can you guess who? I will, as a gift for this one, I will tell you this is sort of a trick question. It is not an obvious pick, meaning it is not Amy or Rory.
Who else was there?
Well, in some other episodes, we had the Paternoster Gang. In the Christmas special, we had Handles.
There's no way it could be Handles. It would never be Handles.
We had Michael Gambon in A Christmas Carol.
I'm going to say then it's, who's the human in the Paternoster Gang?
That would be
the rogue.
That would be Jenny.
Jenny. I'm going to guess it's Jenny.
All right. All right. So Cassie's prophecies of the day are that Deep Breath sees the return of the nanogenes from the empty child. And the doctor briefly thinks that Clara is Jenny from the Paternoster Gang. And we will find out together if she is correct as we watch Peter Capaldi's debut performance as the 12th Doctor, Deep Breath.
Both of these questions, unfair. Just gonna put it out
All
there.
All the questions are unfair. That's what makes it a prophecy.
No, it's not. Oh.
It's not an open book test.
And also, sir, you have not been doing a very good job at your sick little game of guess my favorite thing.
You are correct. I have not done that. I have written down an option now, so we will. I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to be better about that with our return to the show proper. So I do have a Zach's. A Zacky Perfacky for what will be Cassie's favorite moment in the episode. So let's find out if that is true as we watch Deep Breath. Well, hey there. My name is Dino Marino, and I'm the founder, CEO, and lead taxidermist at Dino's Dino Extermination Depot. I'm here to tell you about our exciting new global expansion. That's right. Whether you see a T-Rex in the Thames, a Velociraptor in Venice, or a Stegosaurus at the Statue of Liberty, Dino's Dino dudes can come and take care of that there prehistoric killing machine and send it back to hell where it belongs. I've been around the block a few times there, and let me be the first to tell you that just because you dodged a meteor doesn't mean you can outrun a fully loaded shotgun. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Dino, I haven't seen any dinos my entire life that weren't propped up at a museum. And that's right, because that's just how good me and the boys are at our jobs. So the next time you see a pterodactyl at the Taj Mahal or an Allosaurus at Amsterdam, you know to call Dino's Dino Extermination Depot, your favorite Chicago killers that aren't clowns. And we are back from Deep Breath. Were you holding your breath the whole time, Cassie?
Yep.
It's a long time. It's a long episode. Mm-hmm. This episode had some extra time for being a doctor debut. Not quite as long as a two-parter, but a little bit beefed out compared to a typical episode. So
I thought so.
Yeah, I think this is an hour 10. Okay. Most episodes are 45 minutes.
Okay.
But what'd you think? What'd you think, Cassie?
I must have liked it. I only took like 8 notes.
I do think it's very... I want to say it's very different but it's definitely it's trying to set a tone to just really distinguish it from Matt Smith's era.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is really,
if for no other reason than for a majority of this episode, the doctor is is going through what I will dub face dysmorphia, I feel like is fair from jumping from Eccleston to Tennant to Smith. If you are a being with those faces, you just go, okay, cool, next evolution. But then going from Smith to Capaldi is...
a very big change.
It is a bit jarring.
Yeah, and I think in both good ways and bad, I do think that Clara having that kind of like visceral response to it, like this is just so different from the man I know.
It feels the same way, and this is... I'm sure that there's somebody else who can relate. Because when I was very young, as you know, like my older brother is much older than I am. Mm-hmm. So by the time that I was five is when I like really have like concrete memories of him. But around that same time is when he joined the military and was shipped off. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see him for a very long time. And every time he came back, he was a little bit different because he was becoming a very different person, mm-hmm. who was experiencing life in a way that nobody should.
Yeah.
And so I can relate to Clara in this, in the, this is a face I recognize and one that I've come to love, but it is different and I don't know why. And that person is equally as shell-shocked.
Yeah.
And we need each other, but we are both dealing with the same thing in separate situations.
Yeah. And I think, and one thing that's very interesting to me, especially comparing him to Matt Smith, is that Matt Smith's first episode ends with such a confident, like, hello, I'm the doctor, like him stepping through all the faces. And it's like this very mm-hmm. big introduction. Capaldi almost, the 12th Doctor doesn't even seem sure of that himself yet.
Like his
even like they don't they still haven't addressed why he has the like there's a question put forth like why he has this face.
Who frowned me this face?
Yeah. But he still hasn't answered that question yet, which I think is a very like I appreciate that he is taking like a very different approach to the same character now that he's got this new.
This doctor is confident, but not in the same way.
Yeah.
That the other three had been.
This one, he. How do I want to describe it?
Because we approached it or we discussed it, I think, at the top of this episode. Might have been the other day. I don't quite recall.
Time is a meaningless construct to us.
It truly, truly is. But how this is a doctor that is fundamentally so different from the other, or from this doctor is returning to his pre-war self.
I like to
say that. Even through just the first episode, Capaldi does not feel like a classic doctor, nor does he feel like post-war doctors.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's also Vastra really gets to a good vibe of it in a way that I didn't even pick up on it until literally this viewing of this. I've watched this mm-hmm. episode now 4 or 5 times over the course of my life. And this was the first time I really think something about Vastra's veil speech to Clara really stuck with me.
You mean her like feminism speech? Yep.
Because it was specifically about I wear this veil and the doctor wears a face. He wore the
I don't wear this veil for others.
Yeah, I don't wear this veil in judgment of myself. I wear it in judgment of you because I know that if you saw the real me, you would be judgmental. And therefore, like, this is an indictment of like me having to wear this is an indictment of your character, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a part of it that's like, oh, Moffat is saying that this is the doctor has decided, whether intentionally or not, to take a face that matches his genuine self, or at least the way he genuinely thinks of himself, mm-hmm. which is this older, like because he introduces himself at the end of the episode as I'm the doctor, I'm over 2000 years old.
Yeah.
Which is just to say, I see myself as an old man now.
Yeah.
And I also think that comes with a bit of like he's not masking anymore. Like he was being sort of like charmingly weird. And now he's being like he's still being weird, but it's not always in ways that are like endearing. Sometimes it's just kind of annoying. And so this is a man who has been masking all of his autism his entire life mm-hmm. and is now like, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm testing my friendship with Clara by being full spectrum.
It's the way that I wrote in my notes that they're treating him as one, as you would with an individual that has dementia or Alzheimer's.
There's always a little bit element of that, I think, because their brains are soup when they first regenerate.
So they're just like, what do you want to do right now? Here, imagine you sleeping in my head.
Oh, my brain's too big. It'd be like dropping a piano on. He's like, oh, be gentle then. And then we get a boring. All the beautiful sound design in this. And then there's just one random boring.
Yeah, the sound design in this. Part of my not writing notes is because my brain was being scratched in the best way possible.
all the clockwork droids.
It reminds me of like when I go to get my hair done. I'm doing that not because I enjoy the experience of having my hair trimmed, mm-hmm. but because I love having the little scalp massage and having somebody else wash and brush my hair like I'm a pretty, pretty pony. Oh my goodness. I love it so much. So when all of the little...
It's getting that with the inside of your skull.
Could you imagine that while getting hair done?
I think it'd be too much. I think it'd be too much sensation. You'd be overstimulation.
Overstimulated listening to...
Yeah.
It's the ASMR that kills me.
Really trying to sit down and think about the approach to this episode. I really like that the whole crux of it centers around nobody, including the doctor, really seeming to know who the doctor is anymore.
Yeah.
And I think part of that leans into what I was saying is this is the doctor being like, I am not being performative. I'm not masking anymore. I am mm-hmm. just being who I am. Like who I am inside.
I'm not a charming young man.
Yeah, I am a 2,000-year-old weirdo.
Grizzled old.
I'm a 2,000-year-old homeless man who lives in his big car. I live in a space and time van.
I
dress like a wizard.
Jeez, him though rummaging through the garbage in a nightgown.
Would it be rude to tell you that my favorite moment was what I dubbed the homeless alleyway argument?
I'm trying to figure out what my favorite moment would be, because I will say, because I do like homeless alleyway argument quite a bit. So I went, this man truly is just looking at who he thinks is a fellow hermit. It's like, here, let me try to help. Like, we've all been there. And then just having to backpedal, go, no, I don't want to help you.
Give me your coat. No, I'm cold. Well, I'm cold too. There's no point in both of us being cold. Give me your coat.
Yeah, that's me.
I like that.
That was me that one time I didn't bring a sweater to Disneyland.
I like the that he really dials up the Scottish accent for that. Like, he's really playing in the space of being Scottish.
I'm Scottish. I can properly complain about things.
Give me your coat. We're skipping around a little bit too much.
It going back to the new intro was giving me time exhibition at the observatory vibes.
In the visuals or the sound?
Yes.
Okay.
Like it had science center energy.
Can I say, so I told you before that I had seen mid-production cuts of a lot of these episodes.
Oh no!
I had not seen the intro. Was not included in the.
Okay, I thought it was just going to be like a guy with a piece of paper just going. Woo, 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 woo.
No, it just. I think it just had like a slate.
A ribbon dancer.
I think it was just like an image that just said mm-hmm. intro goes here. But I had still seen that intro before, because that intro was designed by a YouTuber.
Oh, fun.
Somebody just had an idea. They just kind of put it on the internet as like an idea. And Stephen Moffat was like, I have never seen someone properly convey the fact that this ship travels in time. We have gotten a lot of space. Like, we got the time vortex, but we had not seen someone craft an image that shows them traveling through time. And then he had this like clockwork aesthetic that has them flying through time. And Moffat just loved it and went, can we just have you do this, but fancier for the show?
It felt a little bit not. Hold on. Brain pudding.
Planet of the pudding brains.
It did feel a little bit like Alice in Wonderland, just a smidge.
Yeah, I could see that.
It was clockwork gears a la Wicked meets Alice in Wonderland meets Griffith Observatory.
Yeah, I definitely think there's something to that for sure.
Which I'm not sitting here being like, nah, it's stupid. Like, au contraire, I kind of loved it.
Yeah, it was.
And they put his face. There's just something about putting the doctor's face in the intro that just makes me go, ah, this is the show I am watching.
Especially when it's Capaldi's attack eyebrows.
His attack eyebrows.
You could open bottles with these. They want to go off my face and set up their own independent state of eyebrows.
I wonder if those are thoughts that Capaldi has had about his own face.
Moffat just like, give me some thoughts about your face. Just tell me what you think.
Capaldi, so we're writing a whole where the doctor's going to have a hard time with his face. Do you have any critiques, criticisms, things that you
comments, you questions, feel? Criticisms, concerns about your own face? You're the most familiar with your face. What would you say?
Of all the people that have seen your face, yours is your eyes have seen your face the most. Could you please comment on that? And while your eyes are at it, how about your eyebrows? Do you have any thoughts?
It's like, I do. You and I both latched on to the who frowned me this face.
Yeah.
Because they do, you know, talk about how it's strange that he comes in with white hair and he's got, you know, wrinkles on his face and all these things. And even Clara's like, he just regenerated. How does he look like this?
Mm-hmm. He should be new.
Yeah. And then, I think for Clara, it's a little weird, especially because like she has dipped through his timeline, but she's only seen like all these older guys. But even then, all in recent memory, the oldest guy is Eccleston. And even he's I think he was in his mid 30s.
Yeah.
Matt Smith at the end of his run was, I think, just turned 30. Peter Capaldi picking us up is 56. Like the visible age of the actor has nearly doubled.
Yeah.
It's a big change, I'm sure, especially for Clara, who at multiple occasions has sort of implied that she did have a bit of a thing for Matt Smith Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I do think maybe they lean in a little too hard on the he's not your boyfriend.
Yeah.
Thing this because it just makes it sound like the lady doth protest too much, which is more just I don't think they needed to bring that up as much as they did in the episode.
Yeah.
But that's my only real complaint. And I do like the tie off at the end when the doctor's like, Clara, I'm not your boyfriend, but you're not the one who made that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was in hindsight, I'm like, OK, that actually does tie it back to this new thought of this is the doctor unmasking.
Yeah.
He is telling Clara, like, I'm not going to pretend to be your quirky little boyfriend anymore. This is who I am. I'm an old weirdo.
If we're skipping all the way to the end, 11 making the phone call and being like, he needs you. He is so scared. Please.
I'm interested in that because that was a really controversial thing that to bring him in for the phone call.
It felt a little bit like, I don't want to say fan service, but a little bit of like, we know people are not going to be absolutely thrilled,
mm-hmm,
because we've had a lineup so far of these like young, attractive individuals. And now here we have a distinguished gentleman.
A frowned face.
Yeah, we have a frowned face. So there does feel a little bit, it does feel a little bit like like the audience is going to their first day of school with a new teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But then the teacher from the previous year comes by and is just like, hi, class. Like, I need you guys to be really nice to Miss Chavez.
Everybody be nice to Mr. Capaldi.
He's worked really hard and is really excited to be your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, if you need anything, I'm not going to be there. But he's really excited. Like, that's the energy that I got.
He smells like a homeless man sometimes, but he's really cool.
You're going to learn to really like him. And his attack eyebrows is silly. We already have jokes. Okay. Everybody like him.
There was also something I had put together because you had really emphasized it at the end of Matt Smith's run.
Mm.
That Clara was really mad at the doctor for not saying goodbye.
Yeah.
And the last thing that Eleven says to her on the phone call is, goodbye, Clara. Miss you. Which is just, I hadn't even put that together before. And mm-hmm. you actually making that observation so heavily in the previous episode.
Yeah, really, like, I'm so smart.
Hey, I'm just letting you know, I'm giving you credit where credit's due.
I'm so smart. Yeah, so Lesbian Lizard, let's talk about her now.
Yeah, this is our last appearance so far. This is the last time we see the Paternoster gang. Yeah, I'm a little bummed by that too. I like them.
I really like the Paternoster gang. I want my own, like, I don't know if I would say, like, I want a spin-off show just them, because I do like their dynamic specifically with the Doctor.
I will say that if you are interested, and we're going to do some big finish audio this year. I was going to say there's some big finish audio based around the Paternoster Gang.
I do like the Paternoster Gang. If for no other reason than we did make a fun, silly observation about Strax. In that he is and is not just the realization of a D&D character.
Yeah, a very chaotic D&D character just who will do anything for the bit.
I do love him calling everybody boy.
And seeming to have a very minimal grasp of reality.
Also, Vastra having Jenny stand in her office unclothed.
Yeah, like posed for a painting
that she's not doing simply because Jenny lights up the room.
Yeah, simply because Vastra has a little bit of a thing for being a dom in all aspects of her life.
She tells Clara when she enters the room to take off her clothes.
Yeah, like, here, join my wife in nudity, and I will pretend to paint you.
I love that. I want that energy.
Jenny doesn't seem super happy with it, though. Jenny's like, hey, we're married. Chill out. Because there's twice in this episode Vastra does it where Vastra's like, I wondered what you were like when you lost your temper. And Jenny's like, hey, cut that out. One of my favorite lines is
she's so legitimately scary. She's the, like, everything that terrifies me most, a lizard and a strong independent woman. And yet
I do like at the very beginning when there's a T-Rex walking around in the Thames that she's like, oh, I haven't seen this since I was a little girl. they see the dinosaur cough out the TARDIS. And they all run down to meet him, and Strax is like, step out for the glory of the Sontaran Empire. And the first line we get of the 12th Doctor is him going, shush.
Perfect.
I just...
No notes.
Moffat is not a genius, but there are sometimes he just really...
He's not a genius. He does have genius tendencies, though.
Like he has got some good bits, and he executes them very well when he has them. And then later on, when they've got the Doctor back at the Paternoster house, they're trying to put him to sleep. And the Doctor's like, don't look in the mirror. It's furious. I love that line.
I know you do.
I think I've laughed at that line every single time I've watched the episode. It's funny because it's funny every time. and also just the whole speech about how silly bedrooms are. It's like, something's wrong with this room. There's only a bed in it. Why do you mean you have a room just for not being awake and you're missing the room?
I mean, he's got a point.
Doesn't have a point. There's a part that's like, I don't like that that's clever.
I don't like that the Doctor is right about something that I love so much, and that is
being asleep.
My bedroom. I have so much cool art hanging up in my bedroom. Do I see any of it? No, because I'm sleeping when I'm in there.
And then the dinosaur walking around spontaneously combusts, which we find out later is because the half-faced man, as he is credited,
okay,
has a flamethrower arm.
I was just getting lost in his eye.
Which one, the blue one or the brown one?
Yes.
For me, it's that the left side of his head, the exposed part, is so clearly like a little too big compared to his right side.
But you can constantly see all the little everything moving. I was like, is this an animatronic? Is this a makeup? Is this CG? I don't care. I love it. Oh, it's gross. He's got two separate hands.
One hand much bigger than the other. When he pulls off the big hand, it reveals a flamethrower.
He just has that other hand hold on to the lapel of his jacket for the rest of the episode.
It's a brooch.
That was another little detail. I know.
And a clutch. Well, sorry.
It was a detail that I don't think anybody else, unless they are like specifically interested in Victorian morning wear,
mm-hmm.
but the little seat belts, the little hands that like grasp
when they're in the restaurant.
Yeah, that's modeled after Victorian hand belts.
Oh, that's kind of neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's definitely definitely a sign that they probably use all parts of the cow when it comes to the humans they harvest. They're taking their clothes too and reusing them as traps.
Yum, yum, yum. Ooh, he loved me a little costume detail. Yum, yum, yum.
Yeah. Speaking of little details, I like the that moment where they both sit down at the restaurant and they're both debating over who put in the newspaper column to get them there. And, you know, Clara is very justifiably upset that the doctor calls her an egomaniac.
Yes.
Because she thought it was like, she first thought it was an apology. And then she's like, wait a second, you bitch.
I like so far that their dynamic is that of like friends who have been together for a very long time, like a Statler and a Waldorf.
So without going too deep into it, especially because we haven't, like I said, their dynamic has just started, but this is where Clara is my favorite. Clara is my favorite companion with Capaldi. She's my favorite companion, period, specifically with Capaldi is what I mean. And it's because they have this dynamic of like an old married couple.
Yes.
And it only gets more so the longer they're together. Like, she's here for two more seasons. She's here for this season and then the whole next season too.
Cool.
And just as that dynamic progresses, it very much feels like these two people have been together so long they're not even sure where their like brains don't meld anymore. So I'm excited to play out more of that as we revisit it.
As we revisit it, I'm seeing it for the first
time. As I revisit it with you. And I really like that they do play up more of Clara, not even really being an egomaniac, but they do play her as being like really, what's the term? Like, she's almost sensitive about her pride, which I do think there's a level of egomania to it. But it's like she gets really mad and people call her an egomaniac. But then also when people call her like upset, she goes like, I'm not cross, but if I was cross, it would be your fault. Okay, I'm cross.
Yeah, can't relate.
Someone talking themselves into being angry.
Can't relate.
And then
haven't the foggiest what you're talking about.
Talking about the restaurant, I had wondered how you were going to feel about watching all of the robots not eat.
I think it's really funny knowing specifically that that's just actors that are trained to look robotic. Because that's one of my favorite things in film. And we see it a lot, like, we see it way more in some of like the old, I'll call them magic shows, like I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched. Anytime that one of them like pauses in space, all of the actors around them just have to like freeze frame. And then you can just kind of see people like their hands twitching and moving, or like somebody loses balance momentarily. So crowd work in that capacity is one of my favorite things of all time.
To me, it just feels like an old like Disney attraction.
Yes.
Or it's like, I just expect them all to turn and go, it's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, smiling at the end of every day.
The same energy as when you tell kids that are on stage, but not the like focal point of the scene, to just be doing busy work.
To just look busy.
Yeah. Where like when I was a kid, I'd be like, oh, okay, cool, I'm going to write actual things down. And then I look over at a friend and they've just done like scribble gobbledygook instead of saying just the normal like watermelon, 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 watermelon. I would be back there being like, yeah, so Trisha was absolutely off her rocker, and just talking to whoever was right next to me, even though they were the ones also going watermelon, watermelon. I'd be like, yeah, I know.
My favorite was
she was going off about watermelons. It was crazy.
I have a very similar one, but I say washing machine, washing machine, washing machine, washing machine, washing machine.
Yeah,
that's my Walla sound.
Yeah. So I think if I had to, oh man, it's tough. I'm trying still to figure out what's my favorite bit, because I do really like actors having to pantomime eating soup and not actually eating soup.
I do know that you also really liked the way they brought it. They introduced Capaldi in that scene where Clara's just like sitting at the booth all alone and she starts like sniffing around curiously.
And they just pan over to him sitting in the booth like he's a dead fish in a coat.
He's got like his little T-Rex arms. He's just, hi. And she's like, God, the smell. And he's like, I know, it's everywhere. There's a lot of good moments in this episode.
There is a lot of good moments. I
I will say again.
I have a hard time picking a favorite because I was genuinely paying attention and not writing a lick of thing down.
Yeah. I mean, part of the reason I picked the Allie argument was also the part where he's like, I need new clothes and a big long scarf. No, I'm past that now. It looks stupid.
Hey, everybody say what you will, but I think 4 might be the favorite all around.
That's a lot of people. I mean, that's a common phrase. Definitely a common feeling.
I think he would look swell in a green velvet suit, but that's just my opinion.
The booth gets taken down below the restaurant to reveal this. This alien
feet start kicking all crazy
to reveal the alien restaurant where all of the robots have been like slowly keeping themselves pieced together with human parts for. Yeah,
they've been ship of Theseus-ing themselves.
Yeah. The mothership of Theseus.
Yeah.
And they're all, you know, been stitching themselves together as best they can.
I like the one like very old Chinese guy.
Just to tell you how long they've been around for.
Yeah.
I don't know why I snorted there. Ooh. That feels weird. I snorted in my laugh. I don't often snort when I laugh.
Oh, you've picked that up from me.
I do like that when they're like, okay, we have to get out of these hands. And he's like, I'll wiggle out the sonic screwdriver, but you got to make sure you wheel it over to you. And it falls on the ground and Clara's just like, her legs are just long enough to reach it. And she's like, I can almost get it. And the doctor goes, it's times like this I miss Amy.
You mean giraffe woman Amy? Yes.
Yeah, the woman who is, quote, made of legs, the most legs on any living human.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was a cute allusion. Like, it's just a fun little thing. And so they get popped out and they walk around and look at all the little faces. And the doctor's like, oh, it's okay. It's dormant. It's like, you know that? And how do you know it's dormant? He's like, I don't. I'm just hoping. That feels also very me-coded.
It's very D&D.
Yes, absolutely.
It has the same energy as in, I think it's the second episode
mm-hmm.
of Amazing Digital Circus, where Pomni goes up to the like corpse in the like basement and just goes, please don't come alive. He goes, okay, I won't.
I forgot about that.
That's my favorite line. I think it's the second episode.
And then they play a lot in the space with like not knowing who the doctor is anymore. Like the door gets stuck between the doctor and Amy, and the doctor goes, well, no point in them catching us both. And he runs down the hall. Now, later on, we find out it was to basically get a disguise to pretend to be a robot and get information.
Yeah.
But in the moment, you're like, what the fuck?
Oh my God, the doctor's fully just going to leave Clara here all by herself? This doctor sucks.
As Clara's left by herself, she realizes the only thing she can do is hold her breath to try and not get caught. And so she holds her breath and proceeds to walk down the hall in what feels like it's not horror in the traditional sense, but there's just something about how visceral having to hold your breath in a stressful situation is.
Well, because when you are stressed, your heart's beating faster, so you need more oxygen, so you can't hold your breath as long as you could if you were, like, I don't know, driving through a freeway, driving through a tunnel on the freeway, and just, ooh-hoo, let's see how long I can do it. God forbid there's traffic and your sister's cheating.
And they've got her on this, really shallow focus too, so she really like pops in the frame and she like sort of wafts through what feels like a very cloudy environment.
You can just see the red pulses on the side.
Yeah, the red pulses. And then it's like when she steps into the hall and you're like, okay, now she can breathe, you're like, nope, there's guys here. And then she turns the corner and you're like, okay, now she, nope, there's more guys here. And then the second she breathes and like falls down, the guy's like, pick her up. There wasn't any like huge swarm. It was just like he knew the whole time.
Can I just say?
And just needed confirmation.
I loved him.
The half face man.
Yes. Who's his actor? He did a really good job.
Let me pull him up here.
I was like, you have to be there is a very specific skill level where you're a droid. So your script is repeated dialogue, but figuring out a way to give that dialogue dimension, even though you are effectively a parrot man.
Yeah, you have to be very stiff.
You are a Kenku.
Well, he has to be very stiff. So there's a very like he can't emote in a traditional way, especially because half his face is gone. It's not
half
even
half his face is gone. One of his hands is gone.
Yeah. And his name is Peter. His name is Peter Ferdinando.
Peter Ferdinando.
I don't know if that's how he pronounces it, but that's how it's spelled. Peter Ferdinando.
Ferdinando.
Yeah, I think I think he does a great job.
He does a wonderful job.
Yeah, especially I mean, skipping ahead again, but that moment at the end where they're having to have where the doctor is basically saying, like, you've pieced yourself together so many ways that there's nothing original of you left. You're just different parts doing the same function. And basically they have to have this argument of the doctor doesn't want to commit murder and the robot is not programmed to kill himself. But they both know that's the only way this moment's going to end. And so we don't get to see what happens. We just know that we just know how it resolved.
Which there was a half second where I was like, there should be way more blood on that spire. And then I went, never mind. He's a robot.
He is a clock.
He is made of
there should be a
dead
lot more
organs.
There should be a lot more oil on that spire.
The seagulls are going to have a field day with him.
Yeah, I think it's really I do think that he plays it in a very there's a very compelling way he plays it because he can't be emotive in a traditional sense, but he does still manage to find these little nuances to bring in like he is a little more human than he thinks he is.
Yeah, there is desperation, a quality that robots do not have.
Yeah.
Desperation is very human.
Yeah, I think Peter Ferdinando.
Ferdinando.
I think he's got a great
Peter.
He does a great job of bringing it out.
Oh, yes.
I do like, you know, speaking back into that vein of nobody knows who this doctor is yet, even the doctor himself. Mm-hmm. So we don't get to know what happened between the half-faced man and the doctor.
Yeah.
We don't know if the man jumped off, like if the doctor basically talked him into committing suicide. We don't know if that happened. We don't know if the doctor pushed him off. We don't know if he just tripped and fell. And I like there's a part of it where it's like this is so defiantly the opposite of what we got with Matt Smith, where Matt Smith is like, hello, I'm the doctor. I'm going to convince you to run away with the word run. Whereas this doctor's like, you don't know what he did.
Yeah.
And I think there's something very interesting with that for sure.
Interesting, because you had also just made a whole argument about how lovely it was to have a doctor who isn't masking.
Yeah.
Yet here we have right out the gate. Yes, a doctor who is not masking, but also somebody who might have just killed a man.
Can I'm going to go on to a deep I might get on a soapbox here a little bit for a second. I think because, you know, there's this idea of like being performative, not being who you are, being like something else for other people.
Yeah, you know, like hosting a podcast.
Yeah, like hosting a podcast. Like, because you've probably, I'm sure everybody's met people who seem a little fake. And it's not necessarily like that they're.
Yeah, like hosting a podcast.
People who are very, like, people pleasy, very.
Yeah, you're putting on a show.
You're putting on a show. There's a level of artifice over who you are.
Yeah, a veneer, if you would.
Now, but the question to me is, and I think it's an interesting philosophical one at least. Is that if you are being performative, is that performance not part of who you are?
Huh.
And in which case, if this doctor is unmasking, if they are dropping performance and just being their weirdo self, there is a part where it's like, I don't know who I am without that performance, because that's who I've been since my second incarnation, basically, because the first incarnation was the first one that went traveling with humans, and he's had to be doing this performative aspect to him ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Peaking, I think 5 and 10 are sort of maybe the peaks of his I'm masking the most to be normal around humans.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to be to this where it's like I'm throwing all this away, but I haven't been quote unquote normal for 1800 years.
I don't know what normal is anymore.
Yeah. And so I do think there's an element of like,
I've been a whimsy boy for so long. It kind of reminds me of like when if you start saying something ironically.
Yeah.
Like I have a friend who started saying diva.
Uh-huh.
just as a gender neutral, like, what do you mean, diva? Diva, like, not in a, like, not in a mean way. And it's not meant as like a, you're being a diva, but just as like, instead of saying queen.
Yeah, it's just, it was something that made them laugh. Yeah,
it's something that she just says. And now that's how she refers to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that, exactly. Like,
and
there's
so it's that, it's the thing of like, when does it stop being a bit? And when is it now just so synonymous with like you?
Yeah. And now that and Capaldi's doctor, the 12th doctor, is so much like dropping the bits and is like, what am I left with? Like, who am
I? What am I left with? But now different bits.
Yeah. So I think there's something very interesting to that. And I think that this episode is a good way of like, I don't know if it makes you as interested in the show as Matt Smith's like big grand sweeping "Hello, I'm the Doctor" introduction is.
It's not as it doesn't kick you in the teeth quite as much.
Yeah,
but I think that that's what it needs at this point.
Yeah, I think this is a little more of like a simmer rather than a roaring flame, which is I think a healthy outlook for the show. The show needs to be set at different temperatures at different times.
The only other note that I had was that the half face was Ed Gein, but.
Oh, hey there, I'm the half face man.
Oh, he talks more like this. The half face man. Yeah, just because he built a whole hot air balloon with his skin, with human skin, that's. We didn't address that whatsoever. He built a whole hot air balloon. He sewed perfect. He cut out pieces of human flesh in perfect rectangles and then sewed them together one by one as an escape solution. I'm sorry. We didn't address that at all.
He's doing a real skinniest fog with his... around the world in 80 days balloon.
You okay? I just half face man. Peter.
Peter.
What are we doing?
And then
my favorite part though? Fuck. I don't know.
And then I don't know if it was your favorite part, but I am curious to get your opinion on the very end where the half face man wakes up in heaven.
With Missy.
He
must have talked to my boyfriend.
I like his new accent. I think I'll keep it.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
Because she's very immediately very extra. She's like walking with a lot of flourishes. She's carrying her little umbrella.
Welcome to heaven.
You made it. You did it.
I think you want to know my opinion because that's how I would deliver that line, too.
Yeah, that's her name is Michelle Gomez, and she's playing Missy, who's sort of the mystery of this season.
Missy the mystery?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We snaw. I was just curious if you got any vibes off of her whole like,
no.
Like very clearly calling the doctor her boyfriend, which is very funny to me.
No, other than the immediate, oh man, what's this going to be about?
Who's this broad? We're doing a thing.
Well, because I was like, oh, finally, we're just going to have like a normal beginning of this show. We have a new doctor, so we're going to be doing the getting to know you sort of like adventure-y things for a minute there. All right, normal stuff. Oh, and now there's going to be an overarching like thing.
Now the doctor has a girlfriend in heaven.
And it's not River Song. Okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll figure this out.
Yeah, we will see what happens.
I don't have opinions. Have a favorite part. Well, no, I'm trying to because I don't want to give you a point.
For what it's worth, I've not been tracking my points. So even if you give it the point, I.
Then why are we tracking my points?
Because you want to. You.
I don't get anything out of it, but now it's something about, I've been doing long enough.
An egomaniac, needy game lover.
You take that back. I'm the egomaniac.
Yeah, egomaniac, needy game lover who just wants to keep track of points and.
That's you. That is not me.
I love when we could bring things full circle. I wonder if this is why.
This isn't a bit.
I wonder if this is why I like Clara so much. 5 foot one and crying. I never stood a chance.
And brunette. In 2014, we wore our eyeliner the same exact way. I had bangs like that, too.
You did indeed have your bangs like that, too. Well, maybe your favorite part of the episode is me telling you what the next episode is called.
No, because I don't want to give you a point. So I need to, I would say Half Face Man. He's my favorite.
Just generally the, like, his whole vibe.
No, I think it's everybody, all the background people trying to eat. It's so funny.
Well, if I may take another swing here and think, I think your favorite part of this podcast episode will be me telling you the title of the next episode, because next week we will be watching the second episode of the season called Into the Dalek.
Uh-oh. Whatever could that mean?
Well, we'll find out together on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
So you really think I'm an egomaniac?
No, I don't really think that. But it was funny in the moment.
Okay.
I do think you're a game lover.
Do you think I'm a Clara clone? Because that's what I'm getting from you.
No, I don't think so in the long run. I do think there's almost certainly some overlaps, but I'm...
Okay. Just have to clarify before I kick your ass. Before I kick your ass, Zach!
Happy New Year, everybody. Thank you all for continuing to be here with us in 2026. I hope it is a good year for all of you, and I hope we continue to bring you whatever it is we bring you. Or if we're bringing you whatever this is for the first time, be sure you're subscribed to keep getting more of it. And also, it helps us with the algorithm and helping us find other Whovians out there. Special thanks, as always, go to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, Travis Aiken, and Daniel Lindgren. Next week, we get to find out just how little a guy a Dalek is with Into the Dalek. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.